What would you think if I told you you could buy 7 lenses in one? Well, let me take you by the hand and take some of the mystery out of tilt-shift photography. This episode is brought to you by Format.com. Format makes it easy for you to build your fully customizable portfolio website without a single line of code. They focus on photographers like you. Simply sell your photography, send photos to your clients for proofing, and update your galleries straight from Lightroom. Go to format.com/topfloor to start your free 30-day trial. That's format.com/topfloor, format.com/topfloor. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 823 for Thursday, May the 17th, 2018. Tips from the top floor,
tips from the top, all right, from the top floor. Hey, hello and welcome. This is Chris Marquardt. You're listening to Tips from the Top Floor, the longest running photography podcast on the planet. Yay, and I'm still not getting tired of it. I'm back after several pre-recorded episodes. This one is near life. Well, near life, as if a podcast episode was ever anything but a recording. But yeah, I'm recording this close to its release because I'm now back from like a couple of wild weeks. As I think people say, I've been burning the candle on both ends and in the middle. Had the Abbey workshop here in Germany, 27 participants, 2 teachers, me being one of them. We've been doing this for 10 years. It's usually sold out within days and has a solid waiting list. So yeah, there's not much to tell other than it's the most awesome workshop. Unfortunately, it's only in German, but well, maybe sometime in the future. I did this in English once, but it's a bit of a travel thing because it's deep in the Black Forest. It's in a beautiful nature, what's it called? Nature preserve. It's near the Danube River, but it takes a bit of a commitment to travel there. But again, lots of people do this here in Germany, and it's this event that is just so energizing, which allowed me to, after returning home, and it's a whole week, by the way. It's a whole week, almost 24/7, so there's not much sleep there. And it allowed me to come back home, wash my clothes, and almost instantly, I think a couple of days later, hop on a plane to New York City, where I taught a tilt shift workshop. Well, the official title was the New York City Tilt Shift Architecture and Street Photography Workshop. And it was a 3-day workshop that I held together with Canon. Canon's Live Learning, their education division. They do lots of destination workshops in national parks. And this was a bit of a different one for them because Canon has a, and this is, by the way, this episode is not sponsored by Canon in any way, shape, or form. Just full disclosure, I'm just excited about the whole event. We spent 3 days in New York City. We played with Canon's lineup of tilt shift lenses, which is 5 tilt shift lenses at this point in time, up to 135 millimeters, which I, by the way, totally fell in love with, and I don't have one, and I'm looking for a sponsor. A group of awesome people as participants. Some being almost pro level photographers, while some had never used a tilt shift lens. So it's a really good mixture of different skill levels, and that allowed for some really good teaching and some really fun teaching for me. And then of course, as Canon was the official host of the workshop, their support staff was there. Brilliant people, really good teaching experience for me because I mean, there were 3 people from Canon supporting the thing throughout, and Nate and Mason really know their gear in and out, so that allowed me to teach on the creative side, on like how you can use a tilt shift lens to support your photography. And then there was Kimbra as the event manager, making sure that we had all the permits and all the logistics of the whole thing was sorted, the transportation, the meals, the room, the whole experience. I mean, that team was just second to none, and it was a really good experience for me. I really loved doing that, and I hope I can do this again sometime in the future. And the whole topic of tilt shift photography, it's interesting to teach because it can kind of be intimidating for a few reasons, and that's why I would like to dedicate today's episode to tilt shift, and I'll try to dispel a few myths and kind of give you a better idea why I've been using tilt shift lenses myself for almost 10 years. So let's begin with the why, then let's talk a bit about the history, let's talk about the tech, and then the creative side, and of course, at the end, I also want to talk about the cost of it, because I think that's price is probably the most prohibitive thing about tilt shift lenses for a lot of people, but there are ways. So why do I love tilt shift so much? Again, I've been shooting with predominantly tilt shift lenses for almost 10 years, and they really allow me to do things. Well, the short answer is tilt shift is 7 lenses in 1. They are amazingly versatile. They allow you to, they work great in architecture photography, in portrait photography, street photography, landscapes, in food photography, macro, you name it. Or in short, there's almost no genre of photography that cannot benefit from a tilt shift lens. And so tilt shift photography is not its own genre. Definitely isn't. It's a supporting tool for other photography. It allows you to do things that you can't do with any other lens. And it has amazing benefits for your resulting photos. So that was the short why. And I hope you will understand as I continue talking about those lenses. Okay, the history. Where does tilt shift come from? It wasn't that someone woke up in the morning, some engineer at some Japanese company woke up in the morning and said, how about we make these lenses so they can move, they can tilt, and they can shift. No, it has a historic background. It comes from the technical cameras, from the field cameras, the large format, the 4x5 cameras, the 8x10 cameras. My first tilt shift lens, I bought that one used and for like $500, and I couldn't get the hang of it, and I put it on the shelf and I didn't use it for about a year. But my foray into film photography, into medium format and then into 4x5-inch large format, that's what brought me around to tilt shift. Because if you look at a 4x5-inch large format camera, it has bellows between the film plane and the lens plane. It makes the movement between those flexible. It's a flexible lens. You can tilt and shift the lens around in different directions. It's built in. It is built in to the camera itself. And when I got into that large format photography, that's when all of a sudden the whole thing started to make sense. The perspective correction, for example. In the olden days when photographers had nothing but these kind of cameras, that was kind of normal. Everyone used that feature in a camera, perspective correction. Same with the tilting of the focal plane. A lot of photographers used that because they could, because it was part of their cameras. And only when smaller cameras came along, this became kind of more rigid, right? The lens and the sensor or film plane became parallel. And that's what our cameras do these days. This is a parallel thing. It's all in parallel. It makes it kind of easier to understand the whole photography thing, but it also takes away a lot of possibilities. So if you combine the two, the tilt and shift, which is totally normal in large format photography, that's what the bellows is there for. Now, if you understand what that allows you to do and the 7 different things you can do with it, actually there's more than 7. I'm just using the number 7 because it sounds a bit more intriguing. If you know what you can do with that, it's kind of natural to try to bring that back to smaller cameras and incorporate some of that functionality. And of course, in that case, you do it through the lens. So that's how the tilt shift lenses came along. And it really, these movements are one of the reasons why 4x5-inch photography, large format photography, is so satisfying for me, because it gives me a lot of creative flexibility. All right, the tech is next. Technology, fun to play with. If you look at a tilt shift lens, it has a whole bunch of knobs and dials and levers, and yeah, it can be very confusing in the beginning. But what's common to these things is they are there to move the lens or to lock it in place or to allow you to rotate it. And it's fairly simple to understand once you start playing with them. And one thing those tilt shift lenses all have is a zero position. It's the middle position. It's when it's not shifted, when it's not tilted, when everything's kind of locked in place. And tilt shift is first and foremost a normal lens. A pretty normal lens. There's glass in it, there are lenses in it, and its task is to focus an image as sharp as possible onto the sensor in its zero position. That's what it does. And in fact, we'll get to this a bit later, a tilt shift lens is a super sharp lens. Tilt shift lenses are among the best, if not the best lenses in the different companies' lineups, in terms of sharpness, in terms of image quality, detail quality. And one reason that's the case is because a tilt shift lens has a bigger image circle. That image circle that the camera projects into the, or that the lens projects into the camera, is normally only just big enough to cover the sensor. And in this case, they increase that image circle and your sensor only gets to see a small portion of that image circle. Now, question is, why is the image circle so big? It's to allow shifting. Because shifting is, technically speaking, moving the entire lens. Moving the entire lens up and down, side by side. And you need a bigger image circle to accommodate for that. Otherwise, you'll get to see the end of the image circle in your photo. Something will be cut off, and you don't want that. Well, at least most people don't. So it's easier to visualize if you think, let's take a full frame lens and put this on an APS-C crop camera, right? The image circle is bigger, but the crop camera only sees part of that. Tilt shift is pretty much the same. You have a bigger image circle, smaller sensor. And in case of a full frame camera, you put a tilt shift lens on a full frame camera. That means the tilt shift lens has to cover at least medium format. It has to be bigger than the full frame to allow you to shift. Now, question is, why would you want to shift? Well, think of a very typical situation. You're shooting architecture, and you point that camera at a building, and the building doesn't fit in the frame. It's too high for the frame. So naturally, what would you do? You would tilt the camera backwards. You tilt it upwards. And as a result, all those vertical lines in the building start to converge to a vanishing point high up in the sky. That is what we call falling lines. These falling lines are, well, if you talk to architectural photographers, falling lines are not a good thing. At least not if they're slightly falling. If you stand right in front of that building and tilt the camera all the way up, and it's pretty obvious that that's what you're meant to do, but dig into magazines, city magazines. When I was in New York, the hotel had a little coffee table book about New York City in the room. And looking through that, 90% of the photography in there was with straight vertical lines. No falling lines whatsoever. And the way they stay parallel is if you keep the camera parallel to the building, if you do not tilt the camera. Now, what that means is, to make that building fit into the picture, you can use shift. You shift the image circle upwards. And that's how perspective correction works. You keep the camera parallel to the building, you shift the lens, and this way you get straight lines. Now, we'll get into more detail about that and why that is and why digital correction doesn't really cut it in relation to that. But again, perspective correction is, in its basic form, keeping the camera straight. keeping the camera parallel to the architecture. And then, of course, there's the tilt. The tilt is a bit more difficult to explain because it involves, well, it requires a bit of 3D imagination. You have to be able to imagine the focal plane in space in relation to the camera. So you have this camera, again, lens in zero position. You have this parallel to the camera focal plane. And whatever is behind the focal plane and in front of the focal plane towards you is out of focus. That's what we call depth of field. So you have the field, which is the part that is in focus, and then behind it and before it, it gradually dips into that out of focus area. And in order to increase the size of that field, you would typically stop down. You would typically close down the aperture. Instead of shooting at 1.8, you would shoot at f8, f11, f16, f22, depending on how much depth of field you want. Now, the problem there is that you will run into issues. We'll talk about that a bit later, but imagine if it was possible, and it is with a tilt-to-shift lens or with a tilt lens, to tilt that focal plane forward. So you tilt it so it coincides with, or sideways, or upward. So you tilt it that it coincides with another plane in space. And this way you could make this entire plane in focus without having to stop down. You could do this wide open. And we'll later talk about how this is beneficial to your photography. I think one last thing to understand from a technical side, tilt and shift are independent. They have nothing to do with each other. It's probably better to sell a lens for the manufacturer has an easier time selling a lens if it includes all those functions. But there are adapters that you can get where that are only shift adapters or only tilt adapters, and that's totally fine because they have different applications. And if you ask me, out of the tilt and the shift, the relation to those or the percentage when I use them, I'd say shift is probably 90% of what I use, and tilt might be 10%, maybe less. But it also has to do with the focal lengths I use. If I use short focal lengths, if I do wide angle, the shift is becomes more important. Because try that. Try tilting the camera back and looking through the viewfinder with a wide-angle lens compared to a telephoto lens. And the wide-angle lens will have much more falling lines. They will be much more pronounced than with the telephoto lens. So that's where the shift comes in. Much more necessity for perspective correction with wider-angle lenses. And with the longer focal lengths, the focus becomes more important because you have more shallow depth of field. You have less depth of field when you shoot with a longer lens. And being able to tilt that focal plane in space is going to make a big difference in some of your photography. Now let me take a minute to talk about this week's sponsor, Format.com. Format makes it easy to build your own professional portfolio website without a single line of code. In case you wonder how Format is different from the other guys, well, it's simple. They focus on you, on visual artists, on designers, illustrators, and of course, photographers. It's essential these days to present your portfolio online and in style, and Format makes that easy and beautiful. Their themes look amazing. I especially love their Aura theme. It's so clear and stylish, and it presents your photography in a really clean and pleasing way. And if you're planning to sell your photography, you can set up an online store on Format within minutes. They won't even charge a commission on store sales. Don't take my word for it. Give Format a try for free. Each plan includes your free personal domain. And what I really like, you can update your online portfolio straight from Lightroom. And I did just that. I set up a portfolio website. You can check it out at format.chrismarquardt.com. And then uploading and updating my photos straight from Lightroom made this so easy. I love it. They even feature built-in security to protect your photos with passwords and custom watermarks. And that's just scratching the surface. There is more, including a client-proofing workflow, a built-in blogging platform, and their iPhone app. And if you have questions, their 24/7 support is located around the world, so you can always get one of their experts to help you. Now, here's the special deal for you. You can try out Format.com for free for 30 days without a credit card. And all you'll have to do is go to format.com/topfloor. That's format.com/topfloor. Format.com/topfloor. And I thank them for the support. This episode is also brought to you by WeTransfer, which is that service that I personally use all the time to share big files around the world for free. And again, I've just done that with photos from New York. Just share the images. WeTransfer is all about making the creative process easier for everyone. There's no sign-in, no offer codes, no passwords to forget. Just upload, send, and get back to making what you make. Couldn't be easier. 40 million people use WeTransfer to send and receive files every month. And since day one, they have devoted 30% of their ad space to showcasing creative people from around the world, from musicians to illustrators to photographers to podcasters like me. So, in that spirit, let me skip the rest of this ad and get on with it. All right, now we've talked about the why, the history, and the technology of tilt-shift lenses. Let's go into what's really important, and that is the creative aspects. Because, I mean, depending on what kind of photography you do, your goals as a photographer will change, right? If you are, let's say, a technical, scientific photographer, what might be important for you might be the maximum sharpness, capturing certain wavelengths in a photo, and so on. But then if you're a wedding photographer, your photography needs way more emotion, stuff that wouldn't be that wouldn't be helpful in technical photography. As a wedding photographer, you would also be doing more documentation of things, but more of events, not of things. As a fashion photographer, of course, emotion is kind of important too. But then you also have, like, it's necessary to have good color accuracy. Same in product photography. Your job is to show the product in its best possible light, pun intended. But also color accuracy is usually important in product photography. And then you'll be closer to things in that kind of photography, more tabletop photography there. So, of course, we're then going to be more in the realm of having to fix the focus. And so you have different goals for different kinds of photography. And if you look at a tilt-shift lens, it supports pretty much all of the above. All of these things can benefit from tilting or shifting or a combination of the two. Well, let's look at some of the uses. Again, earlier I said there's seven uses for tilt-shift lenses. In fact, there's more. Seven just sounds better. But let me try to narrow it down to nine different things. Number one, a tilt-shift lens is a super sharp prime lens. And again, this comes from the fact that it has a bigger image circle, but your sensor only gets to see a tiny part of that. It only cuts the central part out of the image circle, only uses its sweet spot. And again, with my experience is that tilt-shift lenses are the sharpest lenses out there. They have so much detail sharpness, it's almost unbelievable. I have had photos from my 24mm tilt-shift that I zoomed into and said, wait a minute, that is so different in detail sharpness. Now, detail sharpness isn't everything, but if you need it, then it's there for you. Second, shift lets you correct the perspective or exaggerate it. It's your choice. Again, correcting perspective comes down to not tilting the camera. No more tilting of the camera. Use a level. Use the level in your camera to keep it straight, or use a few tricks. You can do this without having a level. By the way, it's usually easy if you are around architecture. Just takes a bit of practice. And this way, you won't have any falling lines anymore, which results in your compositions being much more tidy, much more deliberate, and they will help the viewer focus on what's important in the shot rather than be distracted by a hodgepodge of crazy angles and lines. Of course, at this point, I usually get the question, but can't I fix this in post? Of course you can. Sure, there's an upright function in Lightroom. Click one button and bam, there you are. But you will lose more. You'll lose parts of the frame. And that's very hard to pre-visualize. It's hard to pre-visualize what you will lose in the frame. And I've often returned home and fixed the perspective, fixed the falling line, and I lost more of the shot than I expected. This is not going to happen with a tilt-shift lens. It's 100% WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. So architecture photographers love that because they can get out of the camera what they need. Now, of course, by the way, I do not fix all the shots. There are shots that can benefit from falling lines, but if I want tidy, if I want deliberate, if I want the least possible amount of distraction from what's important in my shot, straight vertical lines, parallel vertical lines help me, and the shift lens let me do that. Number three, a shift lens lets you emphasize parts of the frame. Now, remember, a shift lens has a bigger image circle than a regular lens. What that means is that it's a wider angle lens, right? A bigger image circle means wider angle. The image circle covers a bigger angle. You only see part of that angle, but the sensor sees only part of that angle, but the lens itself covers a wider angle. Now, what happens at the edge of the frame in a wider angle lens? It's going to stretch things out. It stretches things. And if you don't believe me, use your widest angle lens and place someone's head at the edge of the frame. Even, by the way, this even works with an iPhone camera because they are wide angle. They're not super wide angle, but they're wide angle. And you get a stretched out head. You get an egg head. So and the stretching gets stronger the closer you get to the edge. Now, with a shift lens, you can use that to your advantage by shifting things that you want to stretch at the edge of that image circle. And could be anything, could be something important in the front of the shot, like in a landscape shot. It could even be the legs of a model. Make them a bit longer. It does work quite well. Architecture photographers use this. I often use it in landscape photography to maybe put some emphasis on the foreground. There might be an interesting foreground that I want to give a bit more weight to, visual weight. By shifting that towards the edge of the image circle, I can emphasize that. And the question I often get there, but hey, why don't you just go lower and get closer to what's in front, and then that will be more prominent? Problem is, if you do this from a very low perspective, you lose parts of the landscape. It just gets smaller in the frame. Just try it next time. The thing in the middle will kind of get lost the lower you go. So if you don't want to lose parts of the landscape but still give emphasis to what's in the foreground, a shift lens is your ticket. Number four, shift can make your camera disappear. Yep. In the wide angle book, which will, by the way, be out in August, and that has a whole chapter on tilt shift photography, I call this the vampire trick. Because you can be invisible in mirrors, and that's awesome, especially like when you're shooting interiors. If you shoot interiors, or if you shoot anywhere where there's lots of glass, let's say you're shooting in a museum and you have that issue of the camera and you reflecting in that glass or in the mirror. Now, there are several ways to do this. Like in a mirror on a real estate interior photograph, yeah, you can Photoshop the thing in the mirror out, the camera in the mirror out. But it takes time, it takes effort, and if you don't know what you're doing, it'll look really fake. So instead, tilt shift again offers you this what you see is what you get approach. You will point your camera at the mirror, parallel to the mirror, or whichever way you need, and then move it to the side, to the point where the camera is not visible anymore, and then you can shift sideways. You can shift the image back to where it was, which will help those Now, horizontal lines stay parallel, which will make it look as if you stood in front of the mirror. But you aren't. You're not in the shot. So, make yourself invisible. Number 5, shift can help make your panoramas better. And let's look at our usual way of photographing and stitching panoramas or of tiling images. So you're shooting this from a single point and you tilt the camera sideways and try to rotate it around its nodal point. We've all done this. And the result is that the software has to kind of unbend the images and geometrically modify them. And in the end, by doing that, the software will interpolate pixels. It will lose pixels. It'll have to invent new pixels. And also, the even bigger problem is you lose corners. If you ever stitched a panorama out of just a bunch of shots, or maybe tiled the photo to get more resolution or get to a wider angle, you might have come across a situation where it's a beautiful panorama, but then there's one corner missing because you didn't possibly point the camera straight in that direction, or just the whole bending just made it harder for your photography to cover everything. And then you'll have to crop, and you will unnecessarily lose valuable parts of your composition, of your panorama. I've had this so many times, and I really got sick of that. Because, yeah, it you see how good the panorama could have been, but then you'll have to crop because you don't have that one corner, and it was somewhere on vacation or on a tour, on a trip somewhere where you can't go back and take that last photo. And even if you could, it wouldn't be in the right light because things have changed, the weather would be different. So it's, yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. Now, of course, there's ways to fix that in post. There's like the context sensitive fill option in Photoshop and other software. But that only works well if the sky or the rocks, if that is sky or rocks or foliage, if there's this intricate building detail, it won't be able to fill that. So it doesn't always work. Now, with a shift lens, instead of rotating the camera, you can use parallel shift. Just don't move the camera. Put it on a tripod or hold it straight and don't move it too much. And now take pictures with different levels of shifts in different directions. Maybe sideways, left, middle, right, or up and down, up, middle, bottom. The result is that the software will have almost no problem stitching that because it is already parallel. You might even be able to go to the algorithm in your software that doesn't try to fix the geometry, but only moves them in parallel because that's good enough. So as a result, you have no loss. There's almost no loss in the corners, on the sides, almost no unbending of the images. If you put it on a tripod, there is no unbending of the images. And you're pretty much covering the entire field of view of that bigger wide-angle lens. So it's what you see is what you get, something that is really hard with some of the other panoramas. Number 6 out of 9. Tilt can give you seemingly infinite depth of field while being on a wide open aperture. All right, so far we've been talking about shift. Now let's talk about the tilt. And again, the tilting of the focal plane requires a bit of three-dimensional imagination because we're tilting the focal plane, which is this virtual plane where everything is in focus and it is parallel to the camera. And it, yeah. The easiest way for me to imagine that is if I hold a sheet of paper with two hands, left and right, parallel to the camera at my outstretched arms in front of me, into the room. So that is my focal plane. And depending on where I focus, that sheet is closer or further away. And tilting the focal plane is virtually like tilting that sheet of paper. So this is my way of imagining this. And once you wrap your mind around it, it turns into a lifesaver in quite a few situations. Also turns into a wonderful creative tool. Now let's look at for an example, okay? Increasing your depth of field or your, let's say, perceived depth of field, for example, works really well in classic landscape compositions. You know, the layered compositions, you have a prominent foreground object, let's say an interesting rock or a skull in the desert or something. Then you have some interesting middle ground, maybe some interesting tree standing there. And then there's a background, there's the mountains and the clouds and beautiful sky in the background. And a very typical three-layer landscape composition. Now, if you want everything in focus there, if you want that skull in the foreground to be important and the tree be in focus and the background be in focus, what would you typically do? Well, you have a couple of choices here. You could have you could stop down, as in go to a very small aperture, let's say f22, or if you have a large format camera, f64, f128, or you could do focus stacking. So you take several pictures of different parts of that frame and focus on different things and then make a composite in the end. Doesn't work that well. It's a lot of work. So if you are not an illustrator happy with working with layers in Photoshop, then that's a bit difficult. And stopping down has its own issues, because if you stop down too far, you run into something called the diffraction limit, where the image quality will go down the smaller you make the aperture. And yeah, look it up. Diffraction can be a bit of a problem with some lenses, at least. Now, what you could do if you can manipulate the focal plane is you could tilt that focal plane forward, so it'll coincide with the ground. So imagine that focal plane again. Hold that piece of paper in both hands, left and right, in front of you, parallel to the camera, and now tilt it forward. And if that coincides with the ground, you will have front to back focus at a wide open aperture. That's a really powerful feature once you started understanding it. It takes practice. It does take practice. In large format times, what you would do, and I do this regularly when I shoot with my large format camera, is I have a magnifying glass. I have a loop that I look through at the focusing screen on the back of the camera, and I will go up and down and compare the different sharpnesses and adjust. And there's lots of tiny adjustments until you are exactly at the point where you want to be. But once you got the composition down and the focus down, bam, you have a killer. And it's one photo. It's not a series of photos at different focal distances, which in itself has problems if something moves in the scene. So it's one single photo with what you want in focus without having to stop down. You have the same issue with macro photography. There's just a sliver of focus. You're so close to what you're shooting that the depth of field is very, very shallow. And now, instead of having that focal plane parallel to the camera, you can kind of move it around in that space. Same with product photography. It's tabletop photography in general always suffers from that depth of field issue and having to stop down, or, well, having to stop down and then in the studio having to throw a lot more light at the scene to make up for the tiny amount of light that comes in through a very stopped down lens. So having the ability to shoot wide open while having control of the focus and where it is in space is going to change your photography, because now you can do these product shots with daylight. You can just set up your studio next to a window and that will be sufficient for you to do handheld tilt photography. Yep, done that. If check out the wide angle book and then tell me which of the product photos have been done with flash or with daylight. That's a challenge. That's an official challenge. You'd be surprised. Number 7. Almost there. Tilt lets you emphasize portions of the picture while de-emphasizing others. Yep. And That's because tilt doesn't only allow you to seemingly extend the depth of field, but it allows you to make it look more shallow. Note how I didn't say it allows you to make it more shallow. It allows you to make it look more shallow. There's a bit of a distinction there. Now, let me look at my 24 millimeter lens. If I want a shallow depth of field, well, there are several ways to do that, but the 24 millimeter lens isn't really the right choice there, because small focal lengths, short focal lengths, like a 24 wide angle lenses, have more depth of field. Also, your subject distance influences that and your aperture, but smaller focal lengths will always produce more depth of field. So if you want something that looks shallow, but it comes from a 24 millimeter lens, you can tilt. In this case, it's not tilting forward to make the focal plane coincide with a plane in space. It's tilting it backwards towards you, upwards. That's your friend. And it makes the depth of field seem more shallow. So, because we as human beings are kind of driven towards focus, we look at things in a photo if it's in focus, and stuff that's not in focus, we don't really look at that much. We will look at where it's sharp. And if you tilt that focal plane backwards, you can make it look as if it was very shallow depth of field. So you can very deliberately place the focus even with a wide angle lens. And that is helpful for all sorts of different kinds of photography. It's also a very interesting look, because it's not the way we see the world, and it's also not the way we normally see the world in photos. Normally, it's all sharp, or the depth of field makes kind of sense, but this is going to, tilting that backwards will make it look different. Now, with longer focal lengths, by the way, you can also use that. For example, let's say you in a portrait, you wanna emphasize on the eyes and throw the rest of the photo out of focus, like the rest of the face, upwards and downwards. You can do this by using the backwards tilt. Number 8. The tilt lens lets you create a pseudo-miniature effect. That is probably the one thing that everyone thinks of when you say tilt shift, right? That's, everyone has seen that. Everyone is like, oh yeah, that's tilt shift. And lots of people don't really know. And I'm pretty sure you've been waiting for this to come. That's why I put it to the end. It's probably the one thing that most people have in mind if they think of tilt shift. So question is, how do you do that? How do you use tilt shift to make regular things seem small? Okay, let's do a little mind experiment here. Imagine macro tabletop photography, right? You're looking down onto stuff on the table, maybe small stuff. It's a macro lens. And one thing that makes those kind of photos very recognizable is their shallow depth of field. It's very memorable. It's easy to remember this kind of a look. Every one of us has that in their mind. It is kind of burnt in. That is what small stuff on a table shot with a macro lens looks like. Now, imagine, take that tabletop scene, but increase it in size. And instead of the tabletop, you might now have a bigger square with people on it, or a street or something. And you're looking at that downwards from above. And the only thing you now have to do to recreate that macro look with its shallow depth of field is the shallow depth of field, because you won't have that same depth of field looking down from, let's say, an overpass onto a street, or from something higher up down onto a square full of people. But the tilt shift with its back tilt will simulate shallow depth of field. What is important here is your position relative to that surface. Again, think tabletop. You have to be kind of above and to the side of it. This way, it will just look a lot more convincing. And then, if you drive it home even further, just increase the contrast a little, increase the color saturation a little. It'll not only make the picture pop, but it will also make it look a bit more, yeah, toy-like, right? And if it's a video, speed it up slightly, put some whimsical music on it, and that'll drive home the effect even further. So the tilt-shift miniature effect, or the pseudo-miniature effect, banks on people recognizing the look. They don't even do it. They even do it, don't do it consciously. It's a subconscious thing. It's a look that has been burnt into our minds forever. And by recreating that look, but in a larger context, people will equate that to, oops, look, it's a small thing. All right, number 9. Last but not least, some of these lenses will double as excellent macro lenses. So here's one more thing, and that brings me back to the Canon lineup. Correct me if I'm missing other lenses, but that's the one I'm most familiar with. But their new lenses, the 50, the 90, the 135, they will also double as macro lenses. It's on the names. It says 135 millimeter, such and such macro. They are designed in a way that they are really sharp at short distances. And if you combine that with their tilt ability, then they are, in my book, they are the perfect macro lenses because they just allow you to do so much stuff in that field. But even the 50 as a portrait lens or the 90 as a portrait lens, they can double as macro lenses, and that makes them really, really interesting. So that was 9 things about tilt shift lenses that you might not have known before. All right. Last but not least, cost. Well, they're not cheap. Let's put it this way. But okay, let me answer this a bit more in more detail, because it's not about the financial cost. A tilt shift will cost you in 3 different ways. But first of all, a tilt shift is not a silver bullet. I mean, all the things I talked about are possible, but... And are if you practice with them, are easy to do, but you don't buy a tilt shift lens and everything will be magically different, like from day one. You buy all this amazing functionality with a bit of a learning curve. Takes time to master tilt shift, especially if you want to reap all its benefits. If you only want to do shift, yeah, it should be up and running and I'm up and going within a week of practicing with it. But if you want all these things and you want to integrate all of them into your photography, it'll take you a while. It took me about a year to really get the hang of all the different kinds of things you can do with this sort of a lens. But it was worth every little bit. A tilt shift is now almost always on my camera. My full-frame camera always has the 24mm tilt shift on it because it's so amazingly versatile. I have a crop camera that has longer lenses, but yeah, the 24 tilt shift is, I'd say 90% of the time that is on my full-frame camera. All right, so it has a bit of a learning curve. That was the first cost thing. The second is you buy all this glory with another thing. You have to manually focus and you have to manually expose your shots. That's the price tag. And it's pretty much just a technical limitation. It's just very hard, if not impossible, to put an autofocus in these lenses. I know there's a patent now. Canon has a patent out, but patents don't really mean a lot. Manual focus is just a reality with these lenses. And manual exposure is too, because the exposure system, the metering system, just can't handle light not coming in parallel. Light, if stuff happens at an angle, the autofocus system is just gonna, the auto exposure system is just gonna be very confused, and that will result in overexposure usually when you shift. Okay, so initially I thought this would make it really hard, but honestly, the opposite is the case for me, because the manual focus is really well supported by the camera. If I press the AF on button, like my thumb has, it's right above my thumb on the back of the camera, the AF on button, and I manually focus, I get focus confirmation in the viewfinder, the different focus points flash when they have focus. Also, if I have the beep, the confirmation beep on, which I don't have, but we did this on the weekend in New York with some of the photographers. If you have the confirmation beep on, yeah, press the F on button, turn the focus ring, and it'll go beep beep the moment that it has focus. So that is super easy. Manual focus, easy. Manual exposure is also pretty easy once you learned how to do it. And again, it has made me a better photographer all around, because being able to manually focus and manually expose is like, it's like a superpower. It really is a photographic superpower, because instead of the camera having to do guesswork on where to focus and how to expose the shot, you call the shots. You decide where focus goes and nail pretty much every single shot, and you decide how to expose the shot to make sure that the white thing in there is really white, or it doesn't get washed out, and that the black thing in the frame still holds detail and doesn't get underexposed. So you call the shots, and doing that is, by the way, also supported nicely by these cameras. If you use live view and the histogram, then you can actually do exposure by just looking at the histogram. So learning to read that is certainly a benefit in that context. Now, last but not least, the third part of the cost is, of course, financial. And if you, while during the episode, if you went online to look up tilt shift lenses, you might have had a little holy crap moment, because they're not cheap. They're certainly not cheap. Now, there are some third parties coming out with tilt shift lenses now that are going to put a bit more pressure on the manufacturers, but they are not cheap. And that's why I have bought all my tilt shift lenses used. And just, I mean, I've told it here before, but my first tilt shift lens, the 24, the Canon 24 Mark I, I bought that used from an architecture photographer for $500. And it was beaten up, but the glass was good and the mechanics were good. And I shot with that for 5 years, probably. And you don't, if you're lucky, if you keep your eyes open, you won't have to pay too much for a used tilt shift lens. Definitely much less than the, I don't know, 2000 plus that they usually want for those lenses. Now, of course, telling you all about this is probably going to drive the prices up a bit. But there are sources that sell used gear and that are really reliable. I'll tell you about three sources. They're all in the US, I think, but I believe they all ship internationally. First of all, there's KEH, KEH.com. I think that's all they do, used photo gear. And they have a repair shop, and they do a really good job. I've bought from them repeatedly in the past, even from Germany. They, even with packing and shipping and insurance and stuff, it was still worth doing it. B&H Photo is another one that most people would know for new gear, but they have a used department, and it's always worth being there. When I was in New York, I was at B&H, by the way. And I bought something which I will not talk about in this episode. It's tiny and it flies, let's put it that way. I also went by their used department and talked to a couple of guys there. They know their stuff, and they have their used gear online. And then there's Adorama, which also have a used department. And again, they all have their own repair shops. They are all reputable sources, and I believe they will all ship internationally if you're not in the United States. And I only have personal experience with KEH, though, and that was always a very good experience. They have like different quality levels, starting from new to like new to excellent, plus excellent, and then there's like... Oh, yeah, go look them up. I think the bottom of the thing is the bargain, which in their explanation is, if it says bargain, it'll be beat up. It'll have marks of use, but the glass will be okay. I think I've bought excellent lenses from them, or lenses on the excellent quality level. Again, they repair them, they clean them, they get them in shape. And each of those was almost like new. So I think they do, at least KEH, which I have, again, personal experience with, they underpromise, they overdeliver. Never had a reason to complain at all. So here you have it, Tilt Shift in a nutshell. I have put some of that together, including some photos of the New York weekend on my soapbox. I will link to that in the show notes. I will also link to those used places. And if you're interested in Tilt Shift photography, that I think there's never, you're never too late to start looking into that. All right, that was it for this episode, for this Tilt Shift episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Hope you learned something. Thanks again, everyone, for your support. If you want to help keep Tips from the Top Floor going, I would appreciate if you had a look at tfttf.com/support. It contains anything from sending out a tweet up to giving a monthly donation on Patreon. And of course, also thanks to WeTransfer and Format.com for helping make this episode possible. Also, don't forget to send in your voicemails. Another Q&A episode coming up next week. And you know how I love getting your questions and feedback and your tips and anecdotes. You know the drill. Record something on your smartphone. Send it to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. And I promise I'll make you sound good. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, Silent Partner, Hans-Peter Kagrud, Publishing and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt, Ravsitar Armstead, Slack Imitations by Chief Imitation Officer, CIO, Rusty Russ. My name is Chris Marquardt. Go out and take amazing photos. Be nice to each other. And of course, happy shooting.